For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We'll get to Mark Latham in just a short moment, the One Nation leader in New South Wales. Plenty to talk about, including this decision, which is partly through and still underway in a Sydney court. A federal court judge has found allegations of murder and war crimes levelled at SAS soldier Ben Robert Smith to be substantially true. Decorated war veteran Ben Robert Smith has lost his defamation case against 9 newspapers, according to news.com.au. The 44-year-old did not front the federal court on Thursday. As a matter of fact, I saw a photo of him on social media laying on a beach lounge in Bali last night. Justice Anthony Bosanco found imputations put forward across 8 articles by the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age and the Canberra Times were found to be substantially true. The proceedings were officially dismissed after Justice Bosanco found the articles proved some, not all, of the defamatory imputations in a major win for the newspapers. Justice Bosanco held Mr. Robert Smith was a murderer and a war criminal in his conclusions. This is damning. He is a Victoria Cross holder. What is the implications for the ADF and their operations with the United States and the UK, France, etc.? Justice Bosanco found Mr. Robert Smith's actions on the mission to Whiskey 108 on Easter Sunday in 2009 were found to be substantially true, meaning he was found to have allegedly frog-marched a man with a prosthetic leg out of a secret tunnel at the compound. He's been found by the court to have shot the man with a machine gun in the back. Justice Bosanco also found the murder of Ali Jan at Darwan in September 2012 to be substantially true, where Mr. Robert Smith allegedly kicked the detained shepherd off a cliff while he was handcuffed. It is alleged Mr. Robert Smith marched the farmer to stand over the 10-metre-high cliff before kicking him onto a dry riverbed below. The articles allege the farmer was then dragged to a cornfield and shot by Mr. Robert Smith or another soldier called Person 11. The killing was likened to the movie 300, in which a Spartan warrior kicks an enemy into an abyss. Justice Bosanco told the court, the applicant's conduct and actions on the mission to W108 has found means that the respondents have established the substantial truth of imputations 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 9. The applicant's conduct and actions to the mission to Darwan has found means that the respondents have established the substantial truth of imputations 1, 2, and 3. A massive blow to the ADF, individually, a life-changing blow to Ben Robert Smith. Just on Larry Perkins, I should mention that Jason has sent me an email about Larry's interview. Good on Larry Perkins, writes Jason. My God, he was fired up. How dare these woke W's tell us what to do? Absolute disgrace. That's Jason. Back to what Larry Perkins was talking about. Why do sporting bodies and their power-hungry chiefs think that it's smart business to mix their sport with politics? Why? They might play politics in their smaller kingdoms, but politics, the all-encompassing global noun, is not their forte. And they should stop dragging their code behind one side of the political fence. Now, it's usually the woke side, of course, because by showing bucket loads of diversity, bucket loads of inclusion and sweetness, they think they become more compelling to fans and sponsors. Sponsors, maybe. Governments, certainly. But fans struggle with the sport they love taking a political side, because not all fans barrack for the one side of politics, obviously. Didn't the world's premium sporting bodies learn anything from the NFL drama when selected players decided to take a knee? Fans ended up booing those actions. It's a very complex and polarizing political issue. They knew it. The players didn't. So to the Adelaide Oval last night, the first of 3 football grudge matches between rival states New South Wales and Queensland. This is rugby league. arguably one of the most brutal body contact sports in the world, matched only by the ferocity of their fans. Before the game began, a welcome to country ceremony was held in the middle of the ground, where an Indigenous elder, all body painted and carrying a traditional hunting weapon, appeared. It is a somewhat modern tradition at big events in Australia, albeit way too overused at the moment, and it's a normal part of nights such as these. However, in the context of Australia's upcoming referendum on an Indigenous voice to the Parliament, it could have gone awry, and it did. And it was in front of a large crowd and millions watching on television. Uncle Carl Winder Telfer addressed the crowd and said this.
Today, we're not about pushing your people apart. We're about the union. Of us all, in this great game, in this great country, we need to have the conversations leading up to the end of this year. And I think we're mature enough to make the right call, yeah?
Now, those comments probably received a 50-50 split of applause, but many footy fans didn't appreciate the one-sided campaigning for the voice to Parliament. They didn't. Again, mixing sport with politics at a very sensitive time in Australia. Why do they insist on mixing the two? It's like oil and water. On social media, it didn't take long to find a few stern reactions. And I was reading the Daily Mail this morning. One fan wrote, "Oh, right, now the welcome to country is now a push for the yes vote. I've turned the TV off, not watching this woke SHIT, keep politics out of footy." Another noted, "That so-called welcome to country was a political statement that went over like a lead balloon." A third, "Did anyone see the direct political inference at Origin by the Aboriginal welcome to country dude demanding that we vote yes to the voice? Demanding that we vote yes." Another wrote, "When did the welcome to country become a gratuitous political statement?" And of course, there were those fans who approved, but certainly not as many who disapproved on the social media that I trawled after the game last night. Meanwhile, the Australian newspaper reports today that Indigenous Australians Minister Linda Burney remains completely confident the Yes campaign will convince undecided voters to back the voice to Parliament. But strategists in both camps have privately identified West Australia and Queensland as having the softest support for the voice, and it's getting softer. It's fallen from 58 to 53% over the past month, according to a recent RPM survey. A long way to go, certainly, and the decision could go either way. But I get the feeling that the more our sporting bodies try to use their major events as political campaign platforms for the yes side, the more voters will move into the no camp. This is TNT Radio.
Chris Smith and Mark Latham on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
He's the leader of the One Nation Party in New South Wales. Welcome to you, Mark Latham.
Thanks very much, Chris. Good to be talking to you.
Good to have you on. What are your comments about the Origin welcome to country? I kind of suspected it would happen. I hoped it wouldn't, but they did it.
Well, it's a long-standing political statement, really, isn't it? That somehow playing a game of sport has got something to do with Indigenous land and Indigenous rights. I mean, the truth is that there's a whole bunch of Indigenous players in the rugby league, the AFL and beyond, who've made millions of dollars from what the left wing of politics normally criticise as a product of colonial settlement of Australia. I mean, this is not a game the Indigenous themselves invented. It's an imported game. Rugby comes from England. All those things are supposed to be bad, but nobody ever gives the money back, do they? But they have the virtue signalling statement at the beginning of these matches. It's got nothing to do with the match. Of course, it bears no connection to what we subsequently see in just wanting to watch a sporting event. And as for Uncle Carl last night, smothered in paint and wearing a lap and telling us he was a red kangaroo, as well as to vote yes on The Voice, I don't think many people are going to get their political advice from Uncle Carl.
Tony writes in an email to me a short time ago, "That welcome to country or whatever ceremony in last night's Origin was an absolute disgrace. Sports and politics should never mix, never has and never will. Do the people realise the more they try and shove The Voice down our throat, the harder we will push back?" am looking forward to the no vote getting up. Thank you, Tony, for that. As for the game, they did it again, mate. The same old agonising script.
Well, it happens too many times, Chris. I mean, we've always lived in hope that when it comes down to the last 10 minutes, New South Wales in front by a couple of points, Queensland with Flegler, I think wrongly sin bin. He just tackled Trbojevic upright, and it was an accidental head clash. I thought it was amazing in an Origin game that he was in the bin for 10 minutes, and I thought, well, if Queensland lose this, they'll be screaming blue murder about the wrongful sin binning. But there was Queensland again, adding to their legend against all the odds, scoring 2 tries, 10 points, and winning the game quite comfortably in the end. So it happens too many times to be a coincidence, and you can only conclude that culturally, there's something in the Queensland spirit, the Queensland camp, the Queensland coaching, the Queensland ethos that's got it all over New South Wales, that the Queensland players are willing to fight in the last 10 minutes, put their whole existence on the line, if you like, give it 100%, whereas New South Wales is a bit short of that, and perhaps it's true that the New South Wales players haven't got the same spirit and fighting attitude that you find in Queensland. So culturally, I think it'd be fascinating. I'd love to see a documentary of someone who went into the Queensland Origin camp and heard the talk and the ethos and the spirit and what they were on about, and then went into the New South Wales camp and compared the difference. I think that'd probably tell us a story that has caused a bit of agony for us New South Wales fans over the last 40 years.
You've just said what I've been thinking in the last 20 hours. It's just awful. Can I just say something? This is one of my bugbears. The game starts at 8:15 at night, which is okay for us adults. But if you want the next generation of children to stay with the sport of rugby league and not be tempted by other sports, you've got to start it earlier. Like, my kids fell asleep at halftime, 7-year-olds. They're playing the game. They want to keep playing the game. It is too late. I've coached kids' football teams and they never watch Origin. It's the greatest platform, the greatest stage that we can possibly... But they never watched Origin.
Yeah, it should be an inspiration for the next generation of NRL players. It's obviously the best spectacle. We don't like the result, but Queensland winning last night, it was a fantastic and fascinating game. It's such a high standard of play. You've got the best collection of players in the modern game. Don't you want a 10 or a 12-year-old to be watching it right through to the 80th minute? So it finished at 10 o'clock last night. So they need to start it at 7:30 on the dot, finish at quarter past nine, and allow the young ones to go to bed, well, not happy about the result, but inspired by what they saw and wanting to be a Cameron Munster, wanting to be a Reece Walsh, wanting to be a Nathan Cleary, you know, having that as their dream that night. So, yeah, I think you're right, and the rugby league sells itself short. You know, maybe we get rid of the welcome to country. That might save a bit of time and just get on with the footy.
Yes, exactly. Started earlier. It is just a classic example of a television station running the code when the code needs to start earlier to keep the next generation connected to the game. But anyway, one of my favourite bugbears. The defamation action by Ben Robert Smith has ended with him losing against a number of media outlets. It's just come down. I was going through the details of it at the beginning of the hour. $25 million has been thrown at this with a little bit of help. It's a major, major blow to the ADF and a major blow to Ben Robert Smith. Your reaction?
Well, he rolled the dice. This Victoria Cross winner, previously seen as a magnificent war hero. I've got to say, I've got sympathy for young men who are sent to perform SAS duties, where traditionally they need to do everything to survive and fulfil their mission, and the less the public knows about it, you know, we've all sort of comfortably live with that arrangement. They've been sent there to do things we wouldn't do ourselves.
No.
For that, they deserve our admiration. But Ben Robert Smith took exception to reporting about his activities that got behind the scenes. Some of his former colleagues lagged out on him, which wasn't fantastic. And he rolled the dice to try and clear his name. And now he's facing headlines I saw online just moments ago that read war criminal, murderer, bully. So they're going to, you know, pile in. And I suppose the left wing of politics will now be calling for him to be charged in some capacity. They say they'll get rid of his VC. He'll be stripped of that. And they want to charge him for war crimes. So... he might have, well, he's obviously thinking today he would have been better off to let that sleeping dog lie. The judge has ruled that the papers established pretty clear elements of truth in what they reported, but it just goes to show, and I hope this applies to the case I'm involved in, that you need to understand that defamation's a tricky area, and if you lose trying to put your case across, it can be very expensive. And this one in particular with Ben Robert Smith, you know, I walk from St James train station to Parliament House, and whenever you've seen TV cameras there over the last couple of years, it's about the Robert Smith case, and sometimes you've seen him walking in and out of the court 110 days in the courtroom itself, Chris. So no wonder it's cost so much money. And at the end of the day, I've got to say, you know, unfortunately in politics there's lawfare and defamation action that's taken outside of the parliament to try and silence people. But the ultimate winners in all of this are the lawyers. For them, it's a complete and absolute financial picnic.
Yeah, very, very true. I'll come back with you, Mark, in just a second. I've got to take a break. I want to talk about the words of wisdom from the Reserve Bank Governor. Is anyone listening? And also from Peter Costello, the former Treasurer, coming up next on TNT Radio.
Jeremy Nel on TNT Radio.
I don't know if you saw the latest Reuters reporting.
Yes, with the surveillance camera.
Yes, yes. I just commented, that's a really weird photo for Chinese spaceship. It's just a Chinese flag and a surveillance camera. It has nothing to do with their article whatsoever. But I mean, they're making it so blatant now. Now everybody is calling them out on this propaganda. What I think they're doing, you know, how a lot of the phone scams, they're really, really, I mean, it's very crude. People can tell right away they're scams. So I always wonder why those phone scams are so obvious. Who falls for this crap? The people telling me this is actually, there's a strategy behind that. The whole point of the phone scam is to weed out the high intelligence people. You know, only the people who are dumb enough to fall for the trap that are easy to manipulate to give them money. So I think that's how Reuters work nowadays.
We should troll them by doing similar parody articles of like Chinese restaurants and have a photograph of a dog.
Oh shit, people will believe that though. That's the thing, people will believe that.
Jeremy Nel on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Focused on the facts. Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Another listener, another Tony, in fact, has just written in to rub it in, Mark Latham. Chris, do mention the game, please. New South Wales were pathetic again. Queensland just keep on doing it. The desire they have compared to New South Wales is chalk and cheese. Thank you, Tony. Just leave us alone. We don't want to talk about it anymore. Hey, what do you make of the Reserve Bank Governor, the one who told us interest rates wouldn't rise until next year, saying that if Australians are doing it tough, they should just get in a border? He's a terribly condescending prat, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just telling people how to suck eggs. And in terms of young people dealing with the financial difficulties they face and lack of housing affordability, they're doing that already, aren't they? Young people are obviously having to ensure that every bedroom's occupied and someone's on the couch as they sort out their rental accommodation. But whether you're talking about rental prices or you're talking about housing affordability, in Sydney, Chris, there's no doubt the problem is a lack of housing supply.
Yeah.
Sure, government taxes and stamp duty don't help, and we're debating that in the New South Wales Parliament at the moment. But basically, the New South Wales Department of Planning, which was formerly led by the Green Left Jim Betts, who had a big focus on Indigenous issues, but they weren't doing much to release land, to make approvals, to ensure that apartments were being built, that new homes were being built, and to some extent they were kind of on strike. And if you talk now to any major accommodation builder and supplier in Sydney, they'll say, I'm investing in Queensland, where the projects are approved faster and in greater number. And even though they've got a Labor government up there, they were very, very critical of the former Liberal and National Party government in New South Wales. And that basically is the problem. If Philip Lowe really knew what was happening in Sydney, he'd be calling for an increase in supply to help to bring down the prices.
Instead of giving people a lesson in their household budget, like seriously. Just on that subject of housing, Sydney's richest suburbs must become taller and denser with more high-rise apartments in order to tackle the housing crisis. This is according to a top government advisor. I guess, like it or not, it is true. You can't have sprawling suburbs all the way to the CBD anymore, can you?
No, you can't just have urban sprawl. And Sydney has natural barriers to expansion, the Blue Mountains in the west, national parks to the north and the south, plus river systems that can make this quite expensive to do housing development. But there's some other areas that have been slated for housing development for many, many decades. Take Leppington, for example, and then out towards the new Badgerys Creek Airport. The Department of Planning basically has had nothing moving in that regard, but overall it's true. Sydney needs to go up rather than out. And the great scandal has been the unwillingness of the North Shore councils to meet their housing targets.
Exactly.
And there's some data out there. Something like Parramatta's going to take another 100,000 people over the next decade, and Mossman's taking 10. I mean, that's probably an exaggeration, but that's about the proportion.
Yeah.
That all the growth is in the traditional areas of Western Sydney, and the North Shore councils under the former Liberal government basically turn their back on their valid housing targets. So the new Labor government's got to do something about that. Everyone's got to pull their weight. I mean,
yeah.
You might have the NIMBY attitude about higher density, but everyone's got to pull their weight to deal with this housing affordability crisis.
Yeah, the elite need to take a reality pill on housing. Now, former Treasurer and Nine Entertainment Chairman Peter Costello says young people should save for a home and not take an overseas gap year holiday, sacrifice to get ahead. It's a truism, but he's kind of right, right?
Well, he's right, and Philip Lowe's kind of right, but are these sort of life tips all that helpful for young people? They're probably working these things out for themselves, young people... A better educated generation, supposedly. They've been through university. Do you need to be that smart to work out that saving for a home gets you in there faster than spending your money on a European holiday as a so-called gap year, or that getting a lodger in is going to make your rental a bit more affordable as you slid up the bill? So, I don't think these life tips are going to be all that earth-shattering for young people who basically more interested in just in the price questions. How hard is it to get a loan, to get a deposit together, and to buy a home in Sydney where, you're really looking at $1 million plus to get into detached housing anywhere in Sydney, and they have to start with unit accommodation out on the urban fringe and then try and work their way up.
Yeah, it's a nightmare. I worry about my kids having to face this at the moment. Now, one last one. Energy market executives have warned of the risk of a looming winter power crunch in Australia. What, Mark, can't the renewable nirvana keep the lights on?
No, and I've got a friend who sends me the data of energy shortage alerts put out by the official regulator. And last week, it wasn't all that cold in Sydney last week, and Sydney's the major electricity market in New South Wales, but New South Wales went on a stage 2 alert a couple of nights last week. So as soon as the sun goes down and you lose the solar, and because of the closure of Liddell and that some of the older coal-fired power stations are not running on full capacity because the government, the companies don't pay in the maintenance budget, when the sun goes down in winter and people start turning on the heaters and obviously the cooking appliances, then you get the stage 2, and it was close to a stage 3 alert, and only importation of electricity from Queensland, sunnier Queensland, with more coal-fired power, saved New South Wales from blackouts. So that was at the end of May. So those warnings you're talking about are valid. You've only got to look at that data that's published every night If people have a look at it around 6 p.m. when the sun's going down and the solar turns off, and say it's a still night, so there's no wind power, and of course we haven't got the backup of pumped hydro in any degree in New South Wales, well, of course we're running the risk of blackouts. It's self-evident, except for the policymakers who think renewables are the answer when obviously they're a big part of the problem.
So unnecessary. It's so unnecessary and embarrassing, and you just wonder how chronic this is going to become in the seasons ahead. Mate, thank you very much for your time. I'll let you go. We'll catch up soon, and all the best to the Dragons.
No, well, we need it. We've had the week from hell, haven't we? We're losing our major sponsor, and the Wonder coach turned his back on us, and it's pretty tough if you're a Blues and Dragon supporter, Chris. I've got to tell you, I'm doing it tough indeed.
Yeah, I bet you are. Thank you, mate. Much appreciated.
Cheers.
Yes, there's a little bit of that. Thank you, mate. There you go. Mark Latham, leader of the One Nation Party in the state of New South Wales. Yeah, all of these truisms enunciated by Peter Costello and the Reserve Bank governor, like, seriously, do you need to tell people that they've got to find ways of saving money? Of course they're saving money. They've got to pay the bills. We're all doing that now. We've got to get rid of that. We've got to cut that. We've got to drop that. I support one of my eldest kids in terms of the little apartment that they have. And I had to send an email today, and I followed it up with a call tonight saying, I can't support you anymore. I just don't have the money. It's a reality. You don't need to be told that sort of stuff. I've got some incredible news about Hollywood actor Al Pacino. I'll tell you about that shortly. But first, I've got to get to a news update. But for all the latest community events, rallies, marches, festivals, and fundraisers happening near you, then visit the What's On events calendar on the radio website at tntradio.live. Stay in touch on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio News.
Get the news. The news.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. A former aide to the US Senate has accused Washington of choosing war over helping its own people. Russia's top diplomat claims the West's role in Ukraine is tantamount to supporting genocide. And US Republicans are threatening to hold the director of the FBI in contempt as he refuses to turn over documents subpoenaed by US Congress detailing bribery allegations against President Joe Biden.
The voice of a changing world, Chris Smith. On today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Al Pacino is 83 years of age. He's one of my favourite actors. One of my favourite. He is set to become a father for the fourth time at 83. Now, he's got a girlfriend. She's in her 20s. 20s. 29. Noor Al-Falah. She's 8 months pregnant, according to TMZ. Despite confirming the news to the outlet, reps for Pacino did not immediately respond to request for comment, according to Page Six, which is what I'm reading at the moment. The actor already shares daughter Julie, 33, with Jan Tarrant, as well as twins Olivia and son Anton, 22, with Beverly D'Angelo. Meanwhile, this appears to be Al-Falah's first child. Pacino and Al-Falah first sparked romance rumours when they were spotted grabbing dinner in April of 2022. I think it's quite amazing that an 83-year-old is seeing a 29-year-old. I wouldn't dare suggest that it might have something to do with his multi-million dollar bank balance. I wouldn't dare suggest that. Let's catch up right now with clinical psychiatrist and journalist Tanvir Ahmed. Tanvir Ahmed, welcome to TNT Radio.
Great to be on with you, mate. Good on you.
Good to have you. How does just question without notice, how does a relationship work between an 83-year-old and a 29-year-old? Have you ever had to consult for a couple with that kind of age difference in their relationship?
Yeah, look, to be honest, I have had some rare cases. And, you do wonder. But these days, look, someone like De Niro, he's obviously high status. And if everything's working and it appears to be, you know, the things are working these days.
Oh, physically working, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, look, yeah. Obviously, you know, there's that father figure thing, and the reality is De Niro is De Niro. So that sort of status, and you're right, you know, the money thing I'm sure is a motivator. I mean, you know, the reality is he's unlikely to be around for too much longer. But look, you'd be surprised. I have my doubts when I see them, but I've seen a few where there's, you know, age difference of more than 30 odd years, and most of them seem to make it work.
Interesting, isn't it? Fascinating. Now, the Ben Robert Smith verdict is through. I was speaking to our audience a little earlier about it. He has lost, it appears, on most of those counts where he's alleged to be a murderer. It hasn't been proven in a criminal court, but certainly in this defamation case, which cost the parties $25 million, we now have a Victoria Cross holder who's been accused by a judge of being a multiple murderer, virtually assassinated two people in Afghanistan. What impact will that have on, I guess, a number of things? Firstly, the ADF. Secondly, on the issuing of the Victoria Cross to any kind of soldier. And then the soldiers themselves, who obviously would feel a little less protected sent to a war zone.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I mean, this is a really tough one. You know, this trial has been an amazing trial, a defamation trial that was essentially a war crimes trial. It was parading as a defamation trial.
Yeah.
Look, well, I've seen quite a few special forces over the years, and some of these groups, the army more generally, are intensely tribal. They have to be protected. Their lives are in danger. And it's a sacred sort of duty. So this type of thing will certainly eat into that. And we've had the Brereton inquiry. We've had all these sort of things. Essentially, diluting their ability to act in self-defense, et cetera. I think it does. It definitely takes away. I think that'll, some of the soldiers will think twice, and it diminishes their role a little, I think. Now, without having all the detail of the evidence, et cetera, you know, it's been going on for a little while, but I'm quite familiar with some of the details. And I do think in some of these settings where your life's in danger, you're representing your country, you know, I know often the comment was made in America, the US, where they just hold their soldiers in a different, sacred, elevated light.
Yeah, they
do. There's no way this sort of thing would even, you know, reach the light of day. Look, that's not to say they get a free-for-all, but yeah, a lot of things will be corrupted and sullied through this process on, you know, in all directions.
And I just wonder whether and how long it'll take before all of a sudden a Victoria Cross holder in this country will be charged officially and face a criminal court. You'd have to think that it's close to happening.
Well, you're right. It is possible, isn't it? I mean, it's also a marker of where the Defence Forces stand. You know, it overlaps with our sort of attitudes to things like patriotism. And, you know, all of these things have weakened a little in our society, Chris. So I think what's happened here overlaps with some of those wider trends.
Yeah, that's very, very true. We'll see how this unwinds in the days and weeks ahead. I have a feeling that those who are the special prosecutor dealing with the allegations presented by the Brereton report will have their eyes firmly focused on the issues being determined in the court right now. Presidential candidate Ron DeSantis says he will destroy leftism and bin wokeism. I had a lot to say about this at the very start of the program today. Has he just sunk his chances of being president to make an enemy of absolutely everyone in America who might be centre-left or might be left-wing at some stage, but swing enough to vote right at another stage? He can't just rely on rusted-on Republicans to become the next president.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? But the Republicans, remember, he's got to run primaries first. So remember, in America, I mean, you've got to swing to the right, win your primary, and then you've got to swing to the left a bit, right? So at this stage, I think he's got to beat Trump in the primaries. So he's going all down the culture war path, which is probably not unreasonable. He's got to sort of out-Trump Trump, but then look, you know, more attractive. You know, he's still probably the front runner. Look, he'll come back with some economic credentials, and he has been strong. You know, he's done a few things. You know, things like the asylum seeker stuff. He's come up with some pretty interesting innovations, and his credentials there are strong. So, look, I think this stage of the cycle, Chris, I think it's strategically appropriate, but he'll shift tack when necessary.
It must be like Groundhog Day for most voting Americans when they see that they've got to do exactly what they had to decide on in 2020. They've got to decide between Donald Trump, the way the polls are looking at the moment, and Joe Biden. And people are sort of saying, surely we can have a three-horse race here because these two don't come up to scratch.
Isn't it funny how America keeps throwing up, you know, and then you've got Bernie Sanders, and we've got a bit of an age theme today, don't we, Chris? We're talking about Robert De Niro should run. He's got a 29-year-old girlfriend, get him running. I mean, all these people in the octogenarians, they seem to be ruling the roost in the US, yeah. Which bodes well for us down the track. But you're right, I don't understand how there's a real kind of, it's almost like the monarchy there, their politics. Like you have these really established people and they just can't be knocked off. You know, it's almost like the royal family where they just keep popping up the same people and you can't get rid of them.
Yeah, that's very true. The Victorian Liberal Party now faces a by-election with a very jaded MP, Ryan Smith, apparently bowing out. He's had enough of politics. The party is at rock bottom as it is. They've just been thrashed at a state election. They've got this festering Moira Deeming expulsion and the backlash to that. That party meeting in Bendigo 2 weeks ago was an absolute embarrassment for the leader and the party. How can a party set about rising from the ashes? Because they are really needing a phoenix to get going here.
Yeah, don't they? But I to some extent, they're a broader marker of the Liberal Party, aren't they? I mean, when you're down and out in any form, whether in politics or wherever, you really got to go back to first principles. You know, why are you doing what you're doing? Who the hell are you?
Yeah.
And then really link up, you know, to a sense of purpose and use that. Yeah, you got to find the why, you know, not the what. And, you know, the Liberal Party, that's a sign of a broader crisis in the Liberal Party. And you know, I'm not sure the Victorian Liberal Party do have a proper why. You know, but part of what happened with Moira Deeming is where, you know, they essentially knocking her off for association and limited her right to protest. You know, these basic principles the party should be founded on. So it's been a terrible saga. So I'm not quite sure they know what their why is. But that's where they've got to begin. They've got to begin with the why, first principles, and then rebuild and consolidate from that. But it's not obvious to me that that's going to happen.
No, it's not. And that applies to the Liberal Party right across the nation. And let me remind my American listeners that there's not one Conservative Party on mainland Australia running any jurisdiction, state or territory. Cop that. But that's a really good point. Back to first principles. It's a little bit like running a business that might get off track. Let's get back to why and work our way from there. One last one, The Voice. I noticed that the trajectory it first had is being muted somewhat, and there's now, I guess, a feeling that no might win the day. It's only early stages. We've got to the end of the year until this plays out. But I can think of 1,000 reasons why people would vote no. I can't think of why a new committee or panel of Indigenous people will make a difference to the lives of the disadvantaged in that Indigenous community. I don't get it.
Look, I'm with you, but I think it's a feel-good thing, you know, where people, it's the feels. And, you know, that's a powerful, it's powerful in our public domain now. And there's an argument that emotive reasoning, like, you know, some people argue generally the public debate, and this applies to, you know, all types of politics, all types of, you know, cultural currents, because it's more, in some respects, feminized, and that doesn't mean it's only women, you know, talking about it. Even men will be talking in the same way. It's called emotive reasoning, Chris, and this presents a challenge for conservatives. So rationally, you could make an argument, but emotively, there's just this whole feels about The Voice, and it feels nice, and maybe it'll help Aboriginals, maybe it won't, but the symbolism is nice. But at the same time, I think the backlash will overlap that too, because again, like your gay marriage and stuff before that, you're getting all these people now saying, oh, if you don't vote for this, you're a pariah, you know, you're a racist. And that's where I think there's a whole set of people that will protest against that. There'll be a lot of people going, well, I'm confused about this. Does that make me racist? And then they harden up. They're like, oh, get stuffed. Don't call me a racist. So I actually think that's where strategically, if they're starting to resort to that, some of the supporters of The Voice, that's where they're going to get into trouble, because they're going to alienate a lot of people on the middle ground who don't quite understand it And when they find themselves being called racists and, you know, essentially being beaten to a pulp to make this, make the yes call, that's what, exactly when they're going to protest and go, you know what, I'm going to say no.
And, you know, one last thing on The Voice, and one last thing I'll let you go, but I just get the feeling that when you hear some of these Indigenous leaders, and Noel Pearson needs to be included in this now, someone I had enormous respect for, I don't have now, he creates this doomsday scenario where he says that, you know, reconciliation is over, the way of the black man is, you know, over forever, and making all of these doomsday predictions if no gets over the line, so that two things happen. The Indigenous population become awfully upset and angry at the result of the referendum, and two, Tanvir, we've got to the stage where all the great work we've done to reconcile is torn apart and we're divided again.
Yeah, exactly. Like, when it's all or nothing, yeah, I agree. Some of the rhetoric, Noel Pearson, who I also have respect, great respect for, is just going too far, where it's just making it all or nothing, kind of this apocalyptic sort of stuff, if you do, almost like a blackmail. You know, he's trying to blackmail the public. You know, if we don't do this, you know, it's all over. You've destroyed it all. You know, I just think that's, but that's a point of that they know they're struggling to make a clear argument, you know, why this is necessary. And put it in the place of the wider history. I mean, maybe it'll add a little, it's not going to suddenly change everything, but, you know, if their argument might be, okay, it'll make, it potentially makes a small difference. Even the symbolism may be powerful. You know, that should be the argument. It's not that this is the be all and end all.
Yeah, very, very true. Great to get your insight. Terrific to have you on the program for the first time this year. Let's do it again, Tanvir. Thank you.
Pleasure, mate. Good luck with it, Chris.
Good on you. Thank you very much. Psychiatrist and journalist Tanvir Ahmed. Great insight from someone with his credentials. Just a little bit different to what you get maybe from a political commentator, etc. Great to have him on the program. Up next, we'll take a bit of a break, and then after that, we'll speak again with Sally Grover. Sally's involved in this big legal barney, which has been loosely called Giggle versus Tickle. And it involves a transgender person, a biological man, who demanded to contribute to the Giggle website, which was a women's only website run and created by Sally Grover. And because he or she wasn't allowed to be treated as a woman, they've gone to court, and there's been a development in the court today. We'll tell you about that and speak with Sally Grover right after a break. Hey, you can join TNT Radio and the annual pilgrimage to the healing city of Bath in southwest England to hear the pioneers and innovators of our time reveal how excellent health has been hidden from us and explore what the reveal means for the better world we are co-creating. The Better Way Conference 2023, it's at the Apex Hotel in Bath, UK, until Sunday, June 4, unveiling a better way for health, freedom and sovereignty. The Better Way Conference 2023, heard only on TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Hey, did you see the massive media coverage of what happened in Chicago over Memorial Day weekend? ABC7 Chicago reports that at least 53 people had been shot. 11 of those citizens died. The shooting victims, they range in age from 2 to 77 years old, representing every part of the city. Yet be hard-pressed to find reporting on any of this outside of the Chicago media. You know why? Because these shootings weren't committed with an AR-15. The shooters weren't white supremacists. They weren't wearing Trump or MAGA caps. So the left-wing activist-filled phony media couldn't care less. We don't need to know the name of the 2-year-old who was shot, or the 77-year-old, or any of the 11 who had their lives taken from them by thugs with guns. It doesn't matter to the media. But if even one of these 53 was shot by a quote-unquote right-winger, you'd know all about it. By the way, these Memorial Day weekend numbers top last year's, which were the worst in 5 years in Chicago, with 9 killed and 42 wounded. The only thing that will make this better, in all cities around the country, mandatory sentences for crimes committed with guns. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
Thanks for listening and being a part of the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I told you we had a very busy program. Alex has just sent me an email. Alex says, always great to hear from the terrific and wise Tanvir Ahmed. Chris, loving the guest on your show. Well done. Thank you, Alex. A very busy day today. I'll get to Sally Grover next. Sally is the founder of a female-only networking app, which is on pause at the moment, but soon to reopen. And she's defending her decision to bar a transgender woman from the platform, partly via a constitutional challenge. So lawyers for Giggle for Girls Chief Executive Sally Grover are arguing that Roxanne Tickle, yes, Giggle versus Tickle, this has got to be made into a book or something, or a movie. Lawyers say that Mr. Tickle, or Ms. Tickle, Roxanne Tickle, has the physical appearance and physiological characteristics of a man, raising questions about the interpretations of characteristics of sex in the Sexual Discrimination Act. But while it sounds all very complex, it could lead and could become a precedent in setting up the definition of a woman. And yet you and I know, as we've discussed time and time again on this program, that sex is binary. Anyway, the latest on this particular case comes from Sal Grover herself. She's on the line once again. Welcome back to TNT Radio, Sally Grover.
Thank you so much, Chris.
So after we spoke a couple of weeks back, you've had a decision of sorts today, and it looks as if this continues through the courts, does it?
Yeah, that's correct. So basically, the applicant has been granted leave. This has been going on for 18 months now. He did an Australian human rights complaint against me in January 2022, and then that went to federal court in June of last year, and then he withdrew. And so because he withdrew, then sort of resubmitted based on the same claim in December, it had to have the federal court's permission to go ahead. So that's what's been given today, and now it goes ahead, and Tickle v. Giggle becomes a real court case in Australia. It sounds like a mad puppet show. And then my last name's Grover. I mean, you couldn't make this up, but we
that's
can't
right. That that's right. The next episode of Sesame Street. If Sesame Street was still on. If they've made that decision to go on, this is a disappointment for you, is it? You'd prefer it to be resolved, done with?
You sort of have to just play the cards you've been dealt. I mean, at the end of the day, the Sex Discrimination Act is muddled, and this mess that we're currently in, sort of called the gender wars or culture wars, whatever it is just going to continue unless it is resolved. So you sort of just have to go, okay, this is an opportunity to resolve it and look at the positives of that and, you know, rise to the occasion and just do it. I mean, you know, I wish that this wasn't happening at all. We all know what a man is and what a woman is, and that no human being can change sex. And this concept of there being, you know, illegal sex is, I mean, it's ridiculous. We don't make decisions in our lives based on this. You know, you don't, when you're trying to find someone to marry, you don't look across the bar and think, oh, I wonder what their legal sex is. Like, you just know someone is a man or a woman, and you make decisions based on that. And so because there is this, you know, very small group of people in society that sort of reject their biological sex, which, okay, fine, that's someone's right to do, that's fine. But how much does everybody else in society have to participate in that and then restructure society around something like that when, you know, society works based on reality and truth? And if that's being taken away from us, you know, we're not in a free society.
And my comments about their demand for extra rights and women's rights is this, that in our, you know, caring and loving and sensitive process of including minorities, we tend to go way over the top and open the sluice gates. There's got to be a reasonable granting of rights in these occasions. We need to respect these people. Absolutely. We need to not, you know, damn them on social media. All of that. We need to welcome them. They should feel like as if, you know, they feel like a woman, that's fine. But sex is binary and you can't go all the way on this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, gosh, I'm not I'm not a monster. I'm all for inclusion, but I'm also for truth. And when you're including a male in a female space, this is an inclusion. This is like, this is a lie. And so you're at the same time, you're actually excluding a lot of women. This is the same in women's sports as well. You're excluding the women who don't want males in that environment. And yes. So when we're talking about inclusion, there's just very little thought that goes to, oh, hang on, how is this actually affecting women? And then furthermore, you know, obviously I come at this from a women's rights perspective and female spaces. But to me, this issue is about freedom of belief and freedom of speech as well. This affects every single citizen in Australia, because I think that you, a man, you have just as much of a right to say that's a man standing in front of me as I do, as everyone does. And so while it might seem like such a niche issue, as I said, that this is like our actual freedom of belief and association, and it affects every part of our life. And I just don't think we should have to give that up at all.
Now, I know that you have been crowdfunding to try and get through this process. How are you handling that? And where is Roxanne Tickle getting the money to carry on with this legal action for 18 months?
So we actually built our own crowdfunding site. It's gigglecrowdfund.com. And we did that because in the UK and the US, where women have had to raise money for legal cases, and not just women, actually, anybody who's had sort of had to raise money to defend themselves on these sorts of issues, yeah, have quite often been kicked off, you know, sort of the established crowdfunding sites, because, you know, you get called a bigot or whatever it is. It's just sort of this thought policing. So we, this is sort of great irony that we decided, like, we just didn't want to get kicked off a crowdfunding platform to defend ourselves for kicking a man off a female-only platform. So we just decided to build our own. So we have to raise between $500,000 and $1 million to fight this, which is obviously incredibly daunting. Yeah, it's incredibly daunting. Basically, having to spend this amount of money to make sure that the Sex Discrimination Act does work for women who it was intended for. But so far, the public has been incredibly generous. We've raised about $130,000 so far. Now that we've got the confirmation that it's going ahead, we can really, you know, sort of
ramp it up,
and go crazy with it. And then in terms of the applicant, he was given funding by the Grata Fund, which is a like a charity organization that you know, funds legislation, not legislation, litigation for different sort of demographics, minorities and the like. So yeah, I mean, I think his side of it financially is taken care of, but ours is significantly more. And part of that is because part of our defense is a constitutional challenge. And so, which will be making sure that in law, women are protected, where our own sex class, that women's spaces, services and sports are all female only, which is an important part of our life.
It's true. And it's so timely. It's a big discussion around the world right now. I do it almost every day. Giggle for Girls, when's it returning?
Yeah, so we had to take a little bit of a break and have the coders build a crowdfund in the middle of all of this, but it will be returning in the next few months, and, you know, we'll be going full steam ahead with that. And, you know, that's all exciting. It's just, you know, what the platform is, for anyone who's sort of confused, it was just a female-only app for finding roommates or chatting. We had lesbian dating on there as well, emotional support, or just places where women could connect for all different sorts of reasons, have a voice, just have a support system in the palm of their hand. And so it's very specifically female only. Like, that's the whole point of it. There's lots of trans only apps. There's lots of platforms that exist for everybody. I'm all for this. I just, in the, you know, marketplace of ideas and choices, we need to have female only ones as well.
Sure. I'd support that. I'll let you go. Good luck. This seems like an ongoing and long-term commitment. All the best with it. And we look forward for your Giggle for Girls, Mark 2, getting straight back on social media. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Good on you. No problem. Sally Grover is her name. Yes, Grover. Giggle versus Tickle. I can't make this stuff up. It is true. It is true. And we'll keep across it for you. It's important. That's the other thing about this, as Sally said at the start of that interview, this is important to establish the definition, to establish the demarcation lines of what and who constitutes a woman and what rights they have, as we speak about every day. In a related fashion, PetSmart has become the latest global company to face backlash over LGBTQ merchandise and promotions for household pets. Yes, it's come part of June's Pride Month. Everything's part of June's Pride Month, and includes rainbow-coloured costumes for dogs and cats, as well as treats that say love is love. The North American pet chain released the new You Are Love collection. Pride-themed clothes, toys and items for pet owners last week. And social media is going berserk. I got to get out of here. Dean Mackin is up next. The world has gone mad, I'm telling you. We'll come back and talk about this mad world once again tomorrow. I hope you can join me. This is Chris Smith on TNT Radio.